Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're closing in on the end of season 11. So let's get started right off with episode 1119.
Tribute. When former SSA Emily Prentice connects a copycat killing in New York City to an international killer who has emulated high-profile crimes in Russia and England, the BAU sets out to determine his next move.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, never mind.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know what you were hesitating. That sounded
fine
to me.
Well, no, because I will give you, would you like me to give you the grammatical reason? Because his refers to the BAU.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. Any
in that sentence structure, you're right.
Will refer to the previous noun, the previous noun is BAU.
That's true.
So what you have to say at this point is to determine the killer's next move before he strikes again.
Or the BAU wants to determine its next move before he strikes again.
Yeah.
Yeah, either, you're right. Either of those is a perfectly good way to fix that sentence. And that has been Grammar Corner here on Profiling Criminal Minds.
You can tell I teach ESL now.
I know.
It's grammar.
Hey, it's an important thing to learn. You're absolutely right.
And meanwhile.
Let's get to it. So here is...
I need to finish.
Oh, please. I didn't realize there was a meanwhile. Please, meanwhile.
Oh, yes. A meanwhile, the team continues to deal with the fallout of Morgan's departure.
There's no fallout to Morgan's departure. Nothing has changed in any way that they operate.
Except everybody pretends to be sad he's gone.
Yeah, that's
what
pretty much it.
What a perfunctory bunch of
responses
there was to that. Like, I'm looking at this and going, not one of them believes a word they're saying.
I know. Like, they're all, like, they've been working with this man for 11 years, and there's not really a big deal to him having left. There really isn't.
No.
Oh, man. Although, then again, this show is not about dealing with the consequences of things. Let's not forget how easily they got over thinking Emily was dead. Mm-hmm. They're just back at work next week.
Oh, well, that's explained, though. That's explained in the commentary.
Oh, okay.
For the storm.
Well, we'll talk about it there, then. But anyway, let's get to it. We have a very interesting episode to talk about because it's kind of hilarious that there's no nice way to say this. Emily's a terrible boss. She got someone killed.
Well, but we've always said this. You see, when we were talking, when we were doing the season 15.
Yeah.
Right, the last season, and we're going, what are they crazy?
Planet are you living in that you think this woman could be the head of the FBI?
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why we said that.
It's true.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is.
Unbelievable. Well, this will be good for your career. Well, no, it ain't.
Oh,
she's
my
dead,
God.
Emily. No, Emily is a terrible boss. And whenever she's a boss... she makes terrible decisions.
And people get killed. Yeah.
And people get killed. I mean, and when she goes off on her own, decides she can run everything up, people get killed.
Like, Emily has a bad history with this. And I want to point out something, right? Because we see how that woman died. How badly do you have to botch an undercover operation that woman was alone in a disused warehouse with a serial killer for half an hour? How bad do you have to botch a situation that happened? Unbelievable amount.
And then Dave Rossi tells her, no, it wasn't your fault.
Of course it was her fault.
Of course it was her fault.
I mean, to be fair, this exact basic thing did happen in A Wire in the Blood. But in that situation, the killer was a cop working on the trap. She was able to... oh, God, if I just spoiled that episode of Wire in the Blood.
I was going to say, spoiler,
so
if you haven't seen The Wire, spoiler.
Wire in the Blood.
That episode. Yeah.
They'll have forgotten it by then, hopefully. But anyway, the killer was able to manipulate the circumstances of the stakeout because they knew it was a stakeout. Because they're a comp, right? But in this situation, first off, so you think there's a serial killer running around Whitechapel, and your plan is to just have a woman pretend to be a sex worker and hope he picks her randomly? And well, that worked.
First of all, number one, Emily should have learned that that doesn't work. Number two, this is another one of Criminal Minds' go-tos. It's not the first time they've done this.
No, that's true. You're right. Yeah, although I gotta say, I mean, it's strange that it works so often for the BAU team when it should never work. But B, how is this woman, like, alone with the man? Like, how could that have possibly happened? That there weren't, you're looking for a brutal serial killer who just cut someone up and murdered and ate a child in Russia, right? And you are, like, and you're just leaving her out on a street corner on her own? We get no mechanics of how this stakeout actually ran, but there's no version of how it ran that seems anything but absolutely everyone involved should get fired terrible. Like, there's no excuse for how badly this operation was run. And it's very frustrating to watch the other characters try to give her a pass for it.
Oh, yeah, but that's what they do with all of their
failures. It's true. They have one of the dumbest lines ever said on Criminal Minds, which is that the murdering always happens, you know, towards the summer, never in the winter. And someone's line is, well, it's easier to move around in the summer. And I'm like, is it? Is it easier to move around in the summer? What are you talking about? Like, it's one of those things where it's so dumb, I just want to pause and try to figure out what the person thinks they meant by saying that.
Yeah, because technically it would be easier if you were to really think about it, to get away with stuff in the winter because there are fewer people out.
Yeah, less likely to have witnesses. If they do see you, it's completely normal that you have a mask and a hat and completely covered. Yeah. It's not strange that you have gloves on so you never leave fingerprints anywhere. Like, it's obviously much easier to get away with winter crimes than it is summer crimes, right?
Yeah, except that a lot of criminals, particularly the minor ones, don't like to go out in the cold.
Well, no, of course.
Or the rain.
Or the rain, yeah. Like, they're just people. You know, yeah, they're not magical. They don't like the rain and they don't like the cold either. So, you know, like I get where the criminals are coming from. I like the rain and the cold, but I'm not a normal person. it's just a funny thing for them to say. And it's interesting because they chase him down, figuring this is a Son of Sam, because he does some Son of Sam murders, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you get one of these moments where I always wonder, is this supposed to be meaningful? Like, it's so frustrating because if you read my review, you'll see me talking about this, how, like, I always wonder what stuff is supposed to be meaningful and what stuff isn't. Because he murders a couple in a nice automobile, right? Like you know, rich people in a fancy automobile. He kills them. And people, but it's in the, you know, decrepit part of Brooklyn that he's been killing everyone, or the Bronx that he's been killing everyone else. And so someone's like, I wonder what they were doing in this part of town. And I'm like, oh, are these his real targets and that's going to be meaningful? But no, that's just something they said. We're never going to get an answer for that. Like,
no, they're just having a conversation sometimes. The problem is you never know.
Yeah, what is meaningful and what is not?
What is not?
Because I honestly wonder, why would a rich couple be parked on the side of a road in the middle of a bad part of town? Like, I actually have trouble thinking of a reason that would happen unless they were buying crack or something.
Yeah, you know? And if they were that rich, they could have it brought to them.
That's true. You're right. They could just have the crack delivered. I'm sure there is a service for that. Well, you know, they did all that stuff.
That's what they have
the
phone. That's what they have burner phones for, and that's what they have.
Well, no, that's why nice buildings have concierges. By the way, people, that's what concierges are for. They're for scoring your drugs for you. So if you move into a nice building, remember that.
Your drugs for you, your prostitutes, whatever it is, your dry cleaning, you know.
Just, you know, the normal stuff concierges handle. But no, it's just
opening
so
doors.
Funny. But it's kind of funny, right? Because they do this whole thing about how, wait, he then stuffed a Rolex in the guy's mouth. Maybe he really must
hate rich
people with money. And like, what the hell? You just got to give him at some point.
Yeah, you give up. I mean, today I feel like, yeah, it's funny. Today is one of those days where, yeah, well, give it to them.
Just let them have it. It's fine.
Let them have it.
Well, no, but it's funny because we never get a solid answer to the most important question, which is, like, no, not just that. I mean, we know his dad was a famous murderer and he brutally abused him his entire childhood. Then he was abused in foster care. And when he was, like, he was in jail and there were a bunch of famous serial killers in the same Chicago prison as his dad. So he idolized the serial killer. Like, we get a perfectly good explanation for this guy's psychosis. But the thing I was going to bring up is, how is this guy not trackable? Like, how is it hard to track this guy? Because, and I can't stress this enough, like, he is going from Russia to England to America. Like, the number of people to have, and she, right, has a physical description of this guy because she saw him. A basic physical description of his size, weight, they know he's a man, blah, 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 maybe an approximate age. So it's like, how hard can it be to get a list of all of the people who have been in those countries? And we never get an explanation for how he's so easily able to cross national borders without any trouble whatsoever.
And with tracking nothing.
Yeah, with leaving no trace, no trace of the fact that he's been there.
Well, I guess Emily's algorithm isn't working well. I don't know.
You said
except
Emily.
That it pops up
his
thing
face
in New York.
Immediately. Yeah, like they
The BAU can immediately get when they do the fishing thing.
Yeah. Once they say it's a fishing knife, what if he's also a fisherman? Okay, well that's great, but it's like, why didn't you have a list of 1,000 guys it could have been, and then the fisherman's knife is a good sign. Is a good way to like help figure that out. Although, by the way, where are their forensics people? Because, you know, Jack the Ripper, long-bladed surgical knife, is nothing like a fish-cutting knife. Like, you think I've seen enough episodes of Bones to know that they should be able to tell that was a fishing knife, right?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. And in England, what do you mean? They don't fish in England? Are you kidding me?
Of course they do.
And besides, and we've all watched
Silent Witness?
Silent Witness, right? Yeah,
about how so good they are with the forensic
how
science.
How good they are in England.
At the forensic science. So it's like, the fact that he was using, like, because he tries to be dead on to what all of the serial killer's history is. The fact that he switched knives from, you know, long-bladed surgical thing to a boning knife from that fishermen use, that's a pretty huge MO change that would make you think that's a significant thing. And it's not until she remembers it that they understand. But it's weird because they understand the significance of it immediately the second she remembers it, right?
And,
but,
of course, as Emily's boyfriend points out, she should be going into therapy. She might have actually remembered earlier.
Had
but
she
of
bothered
course, Emily,
to go into
no, I just need to find this guy and kill him. That's what she means when she says, no, there's only one thing I need to do to stop these nightmares.
Yeah, she's right. I know.
Well, yeah.
But what you have to understand is, it's so much worse than PTSD. She's unique and special, and no one has ever gone through anything like she's gone through, and so she deserves to be treated completely differently than everyone else who's had a problem in their life. And if you know who we're referencing right now, you've been listening to us talk about the show for a while. But it's like, yeah, you got this woman killed. Own that and be a professional in the steps you take to avenge her. You know, but don't pull this nonsense where you've got to go and do it on your own. Like, use the correct steps. Because guess what? When, as you said, once you've gotten therapy for this stuff, you're going to be a better, like, you're going to have a clear head about dealing with this situation. And having a clear head is going to help you find this guy. I mean, I didn't think about it right away, but you're right. If she had gone to the trouble of actually getting therapy, she probably would have remembered the details. Yeah. Why didn't she do a freaking cognitive interview? The way she's constantly giving, have someone give her a cognitive interview, because she was a witness to the crime, to look for clues. She does it enough with everybody else. Why is she too good for a cognitive interview until she actually gets to New York and talks to her own team? You know, it's been weeks.
X team.
But the point is, it's been weeks. It's been long enough for the guy to leave London and go to Boston and Boston strangle a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that's plenty of time for you to have that cognitive done and help get a lead on this guy. So the fact that you're not bothering to do it is kind of troubling. And it makes it seem, as you said, like you want to make this more about you than actually catching the guy.
Well, you know, yeah.
There are. Let's just say these characters have some well-established personality flaws that, you know, a lot of them suffer from.
As I said, there is a meta Emily.
Well, it is kind of fascinating to me that in all of this stuff, right, the only time they ever had to contrive a situation where someone actually needed to get personal revenge is Aaron and the Reaper.
Yeah.
Like, every other time, people go out of their way and do stupid things because they want personal revenge, right? You know? Derek, you know, Derek betrays someone and has him murdered by people. What do you call it? Emily doesn't let people in early enough and get the proper treatment for her PTSD situation. JJ murders a bunch of people. Like, the only time the show ever managed to contrive it so someone got their, like, they actually had a reason to get their revenge was the showdown with the Reaper, where there's very little Aaron could have done differently in that situation.
Yep.
Without risking his family's life. Right? And so, yeah, there you go. And it's weird that Emily does this again. So they find out his name relatively, I mean, it's not that hard. You'd think they could have, they should have had a list of 1,500 people who were, although I guess, if I'm thinking about it, the list of people who were in Russia from that week to that week, and in London from that week to that week, and in Boston from that week to that week, that actually wouldn't be that big a list. But it should have been a list of, like, say, 200 people that they needed to narrow down, and then they look harder, and she remembers the fishing knife, and blah, 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 blah. But it's like, they shouldn't have acted like it was a complete impossibility to track, because they talk about all of this stuff about, he must have a way of getting from country to country without leaving a record. Maybe he's a diplomat, blah, 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 blah. But you can't set up something like that and never pay it off. If you're going to pretend that it's impossible to get from area to area without there being any record of you being in those various areas, then at the end of the episode, you have to explain how he did it. And when we find out that, no, he's just a fisherman with no particular resources, right? Well,
maybe he took a fishing boat across and
yes, a fishing boat from the Bering Sea to London.
Hey,
he found that famous passage through the Arctic to get from Alaska around the top of the world.
Yeah, well, nobody says that anybody in Criminal Minds knows anything about geography.
Oh, it's so true. Oh my god, it's so true. No, but, and that's what got me about the episode, is that, like, they set up all of this stuff, and you're waiting for it to pay off, and it never does. And the only thing they end up doing is say, okay, well, you know, what's the most likely place for a serial killer to go? And they're like, well, I mean, I guess Chicago, because there's so many serial killers there. But what they don't tell you is that if you look at the loops on the map, you could just as the same amount of time have gotten to Florida from New York City. And there are, if not equally, almost as many famous serial killers from Florida as there are from Chicago. So it's a very bold bet they make. Of course, then they find out the guy himself is from Chicago, so that should be your, like, that would be your tip-off. But the fact that they, just on the raw numbers in Chicago, I don't think that's enough.
But guess what? It justifies Spencer Reed's geographic profiling.
You're right. And that's really all it has to do, I guess.
Yes. You know, it has to, you know. Well, we have to, now and then, we have to be reminded that Spencer Reed.
Yeah. You know, he does have a use on the team. I get it. I'm not going to pretend he doesn't. And it's kind of funny, though, because this is one of those episodes where it's like, literally, someone just sees the killer and calls the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Although I find, and I know they want to do it because they want to be bleak and blah, 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 blah. I find the idea that he could have, like, magically somewhere within this dorm found the room of the exact woman who saw him as she was calling the cops.
Yeah.
That's kind of preposterous to me.
Yeah. And for sure, because he didn't know her name or anything else about her.
No, doesn't know her name, doesn't know where, only knows that she's in a, that she lives in that dorm. That's it. And yet somehow he manages to walk right up to her room as she's on the phone with the FBI telling them about him. Come on, guys.
Yes, yeah. And but they weren't, were they nursing students?
No, it was just a regular university. No.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah. You know, he didn't really care whether
he pretended to be. Yeah.
As the team pretended he was, or as Emily pretended he was.
That's true. Although they also did this weird thing where they had said that, what do you call it? Berkowitz was a super misogynist who only shot women, only shot one guy. He thought it was a woman with long hair. And I'm like, that's just not true. Yeah. It was completely normal for men to have long hair at the time. And he saw a couple making out in a car and he fired wildly into the car like 6 times. So yeah. No, he had shot at men before. He just didn't happen to kill the man in that situation. Yeah. So yeah.
There's a number of things I was going,
come on.
Okay. Go on. Feel free.
Yeah, go ahead. Just let him have it. So yeah, like it's, how do I put this? It's kind of a if ending. But Emily gets to shoot the guy in the face and that's all she wanted. And I'm sure she's fine now. I'm sure she'll have zero further emotional issues to deal with, right?
That's how these things work. Of course not. She's never going to have another
nightmare about this guy. No, that's never going to come up again.
Never.
Yeah, it's very easy to cure this stuff, don't you know?
Yeah, no, they could never, ever deal with. Actually, I watched NCIS New Orleans last night.
Oh. Well, we do love Scott Bakula, and always have.
Well, yes, and it really did focus on Bakula.
Oh, nice.
And why he was so determined to he's been having nightmares. Like he almost died, but anyway, at one point,
Been having PTSD about it.
But it's not that. He's been having these like hallucinations and things, and he's just can't get to sleep. He hasn't been able to sleep ever since what happened last year.
Oh,
anyway, okay. And he's been seeing a therapist.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. Whoa.
A real grown-up in one of these shows.
Yeah, and he's been trying to figure out what's going on, and they can't figure it out. And finally, the therapist does suggest that perhaps these hallucinations and things, and they're strange, and you see the hallucinations periodically.
Right.
And he's not sleeping, so CC Rider. Not CC Rider, you know CC. CC, what's her face?
CCH Pounder.
Yeah, no. Thank you.
Oh yeah, that's who's on the show. I forgot she was on the show.
She's on the show. She's the coroner.
Gotcha.
Anyway, a medical examiner. So anyway, she. But his therapist finally says, "Well, these hallucinations maybe because he got captured by this horrible group, and they gave him LSD at one point.
Oof.
And so what she's thinking is that potentially the LSD has broken something in his memory structures, right? So this is clearly something from his past
Yeah,
because
something
it's
has, yeah, come
consistent,
loose.
right? Something has come loose. And so they decide to, so she says, well, it's an experimental, but they're trying to use small doses of LSD.
Yeah, to treat PTSD
Yeah,
famously.
so
And
watch.
apparently, by the way, apparently it works great.
Yeah, well, it worked with him.
Good.
Yeah, so we do find out what we know how horrible his father really was. And
Ah,
of
okay.
course, this is a childhood memory
Had
that he had
suppressed.
totally,
Yeah.
totally repressed. And because he has always believed that he was responsible for his father was in jail.
Ah.
Right when his father was in jail, and the
He had
man who
blamed
taught
himself
him,
for that.
oh no, oh no, 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 oh no, it's much worse than that. You wouldn't repress just that. It was his father was in jail and had been in jail for years and years and years, or for quite a long time.
Right.
And you see the man who taught him to play the piano.
Okay.
And his mother had taken up with the man who taught him to play piano in
Gotcha.
the bar, the honky tonk piano, the blues piano. And anyway, when his father gets out of jail, he was, of course, a violent, vicious man, as
Yeah.
we have found out during
We
the,
have surmised based on
well, not
everything
even
about the man.
clearly found out during all the
I
years.
understand. I was just trying to be clever. Keep
Yeah.
going.
Well, no, because he barely had anything to do with his father. He never went to visit him in jail or
I
anything.
understand.
Anyway, his father worms out of him the fact that Red has been hanging around this guy.
Ah, okay.
And the guy and his father goes and kills him.
Yeah, of course. And
But takes little Scott with him.
Bacula to see it. No, I understand the concept. Well, of course he would repress that. Yikes.
So,
Oh, poor
and
guy.
as CCH Pounder says, and this explains why you have to go and save everybody else.
And I want to point out to everybody, this is why it's so important to be willing to have therapy if you have ridiculously melodramatic trauma in your past. Because you'll end
No.
up being haunted for the rest of your life. Seriously though, like don't be afraid of therapy. And that's a lot of people are afraid of therapy, and I don't get it. You know,
Well,
it's a very, I mean, it's a scary thing to do to face up to your stuff, but it really does help a ton of people.
yeah, as long as you get a good one.
Well,
And
yeah.
there are lots of good ones around, you know. I
Yeah,
mean,
that's absolutely true.
the problem is that it costs, and
That's
it's
true.
and you know, and people go, jump from therapist to therapist, and
Well, that's actually something that comes a lot up a lot as we talk about, because we always talk when we're watching Criminal Minds about how
yes.
easy some of these killers were to divert from killing. But when it comes right down to it, they're all poor. None of
Yeah.
these kids have re like none of these
There are
people
no
have
resources.
resources.
Yeah.
There are no resources in America to help these kids. I don't remember which one it was. We were talking about one, and I was like, you know, you could have just taken this kid to see a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And you were like, it's set in Texas. Of course they weren't gonna take a kid to see a doctor. I'm like, oh, right. I have a utopian idea of how, you know, easy it is to get treatment for kids. But no, you have to know, A, you have to know it's an option. B, you have to be able to afford it because it's
Yeah.
America. So yeah,
It
it's
makes
rough
more.
out there. And people wonder why there are so many serial killers in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, child abuse is baked into their country. That's why. All right, let's move on to the next episode.
Or as Letty, whatever her name was, says, do Americans hate their children?
Yes, 100%. There's no question.
Go find the book in the 80s. Pogrebin is her
Yeah.
name, Letty Pogrebin.
All right,
Just
hit me.
okay, now we're going to go to the next one, Inner Beauty.
Oh.
When two Sacramento, California women are found dead from causes brought on by crude facial surgeries, the BAU attempts to profile a killer determined to mold his victims into his vision of the ideal woman. Meanwhile, Rossi finds himself forced to endure an awkward reunion with his ex-wife, Hayden.
So, that's a perfectly good use of meanwhile.
Yep. Not going to complain.
So, here is why this episode bothered me so much. I mean, it's not the main plot. We'll talk about the main plot in a second. When his daughter was introduced last year, right? We had the first, like, legitimately great David Rossi moment in I don't know how long. It was a wonderful scene for Joe Mantegna to play. And it had this thing where you're like, oh my God, he's growing up. He's he is understanding who he is as a person and who he was then. And he wants to admit that, and he wants to be better now. And it's like, it is such a good scene. The two of them at the airport in that episode. It's an amazing scene.
Yep.
And to then, like, to have the writers say, oh, well, we should just have to do all that again and just erase all of his emotional growth pisses me off so much.
Oh, no, it was. Now, in all fairness,
please.
Seeing as, despite the commentary, I would still argue they do not keep a Bible.
Okay.
Okay. this is a new writer.
All right.
Who is the writer for this episode.
Right.
There is no character Bible. and as you are quick to point out, Joe Mantegna is along for the ride and he couldn't give a shit about his character.
Yeah, okay.
So you put all of that together. No, because when she says this, he should have just said, yeah, I've already started to deal with this. Yeah, I know. I would never have. You should have. No, you did the right thing.
You did the right thing. And I'm just, and I should, no, and you said, I should have, once I got back together with my daughter, I should have frigging contacted you to apologize, but I was too prideful.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he should say to her.
Mm-hmm. But, apparently he did try to call her for a week. She wouldn't return the calls. Well, you can leave a freaking message.
Yep.
It says, look, I realize I was crappy. I just want to say I'm sorry.
You were right to do it.
You were right to do it.
You were right to do it. And I am so, and I am sorry. I was the kind of person that made you think I couldn't be trusted with this information. And I am doing my best to be the kind of father I should have wanted to be back then. There you go. That's all you had to say, David. And she would have called you back.
And she would have called you back, but no. You, when you called her back, was, why didn't you tell me I had a daughter?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he was a complete dick about it. 100%.
Well, obviously, given this particular interaction.
Oh, yeah. Given everything we see about him in these scenes, yeah. He was a complete dick about it. You know he was. And it's like, it undoes the beautiful growth from that scene.
Yeah.
And it really pisses me off.
Because this is where, well, you know, then David Rossi does, like Joe Mantegna is a brilliant actor. Nobody says he's a writer.
Yeah, I know.
And nobody says, like, he plays whatever is given to him, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, somebody should have gone up to this writer and said, or somebody in the writing room, they should have discussed this at some point. I can't remember who wrote that episode last year, but.
But all you had to do is just watch one scene of the show.
Yeah.
And you would have known, okay, that scene I just watched, I'll use that as the jumping. Yeah, I will use that scene I just watched as the jumping off point for what to do with the character next. But it's like, that has to be your new zero. Like, that scene with his daughter is your new zero. You can't just do a worse version of that scene again and call it a day. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. And it is horrible. And I'm just trying to think, so were all of the writers somewhere else and not being terribly involved in the writing room when this guy was putting this together?
Maybe.
Because they do spend a lot of money on the last episode.
They did, actually, yeah.
Yeah, they spent a
It's
lot of
clearly a
it.
very. There's a helicopter explosion in the last episode of the season.
I
It was
know,
not
but
cheap. I mean,
yeah.
I know it's CG, but it still wasn't cheap.
No, to make it, because they did have a real helicopter
Oh, yeah, they
land.
have real one on the scene. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, you know, and because they do talk about that in the commentary too.
But yeah, so that
Yeah.
it bothered me. Well, and especially because I know that his daughter is going to go get a job on another show, and so they're just going to say, "Well, I guess we're just gonna," and it's like, we're just not going to do the story with Hayden anymore. And that really bothered me too. And it's like, just because you can't get your daughter on the show anymore because she's got another job, doesn't mean you can't continue the story between the two of them that you set up here and in the
Yeah.
season ender. It's just, I mean, obviously I wasn't feeling that way when I
When you
first
first
watched these
saw it, yeah.
episodes, but now that I know where it's going, it's disappointing that they do the reset in this episode and they start doing work with them in the next week with them as a couple, and then the next year the daughter gets another job, so that just all gets thrown away. It really ticks me off.
Yeah, well, wait till you hear the commentary. Oh
No.
yeah. No, I tell you, I really do think that when we're finished all of this, there are a number of things. And to our listening audience, we may not do this because we promise to do things and then, we get life gets in the way,
Sidetracked.
right? We get
We're very
sidetracked,
we're busy
as you
people.
well know.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I really do think that it would be worth just listening to all of the commentaries across the board. Some seasons don't have any.
Trying to
They
come up
just
with a
have
grand
cut.
unified theory
Well,
of what these people were doing.
we have meta characters here,
We do.
but and we have such complaints about continuity,
Yeah.
about production,
And so
about,
listening to all of the commentaries might help us figure a lot of that out.
well, I tell you, this commentary in for the storm was a real eye-opener, and I'm going, well, boy, does that explain.
Well, we're not talking about the storm yet. That's next episode. So let's zoom in on the killer this week.
Yeah. Okay,
They
killer.
profile. It's weird. There's a profile for the guy that I'm like, why did you jump to that? And it happens sometimes where it's like, I don't understand why you jumped to this profile, because it's this insane scene where they're like, he must be a sadist who enjoys their pain. And I'm like, but these, like, there is no evidence that either of the bodies you find, the first two bodies you find, were tortured. And I know what you're gonna say, cutting someone's face open is pretty torturous. But like, they haven't been starved, they haven't been beaten, they haven't been given weird drugs, they haven't, and there's no sign of
Sexual
cutting,
assault.
sexual assault. There's no even sign of cutting that isn't for a concrete purpose.
Yeah.
Like, he is clearly doing something to their faces because it's the same wound to both women, right? So he
Yeah.
clearly has something in mind, and that should be clear right away. So the idea that they jump to the fact that he's a sadist because he cut their faces is such a leap that it seems almost unprofessional on their part.
Well, I would say that this new writer had a list of things that had to go into the episode, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
That's how I'm explaining it.
Yeah, that's the there's got to be a certain number of misdirects, and he couldn't come up with a plausible misdirect.
And there was nobody sitting in the writing room to help him.
No, so he just went off on his own and this happened. Yeah, and it's very frustrating. So the killer this week is one of their attempts at a more sympathetic than usual. A more sympathetic than usual killer, because he honestly is just a guy that a bunch of bad stuff happened to
Yeah.
and has processed it terribly.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's like, it's rare we get to feel bad for somebody on the show.
Right.
But I think they kind of manage it this week. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they do, except what I would say. Yeah, I mean, sort of, except that I would say, okay, yes, but. And my big but is that they set it up. See, they want to give the girl a reason to kill herself.
Yeah.
Okay, now this guy is so protective of this girl and is so enamored of this girl. I cannot imagine that he would actually leave her alone in the park.
Alone in a park.
The first
people.
Time that he took her
I know.
There. And
that
to
is
go
incredibly
contrived.
Just to get a bottle of wine.
Just to get a bottle of wine. That would have, this terribly contrived, he would have brought her with him. He would have never left her alone if he was the person that they are setting him up to be.
No, I'm going to agree with you
so
on that one.
So the minute that happened, whatever sympathy might have been sort of building, maybe, I couldn't do it after that because I'm going, no, I don't believe what was, how can I put it? I don't believe the way this character was written then, that it was a contrivance that they needed some contrivance for her to kill herself.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you could have honestly, like,
I mean, he was going to marry her.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you could have just her. Oh yeah. And then you could have made it. So I know it's going to sound weird because they like to have this one dramatic scene, but it's like, you could have just had it be the weight of her experiences and her depression and his constant, you know, fawning over her, making her think she wasn't good enough for him, blah, 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 blah. Right. Yeah. That could have been a thing that drove her to suicide. Mm-hmm. Right. But by doing this single dramatic thing, so he's responsible for her suicide, that seems like a step too far for believability.
Yeah. And I will say that they managed to write the last woman that he took well. I mean, she was smart enough to figure out, okay, I got to play along with this guy.
Oh, yeah. Like, she immediately figured
chances.
Out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She figured out the way in which he was crazy. She mm-hmm. saw how he wanted her to play along, and she does it all completely well.
Yep.
Yeah. So I did really like that scene.
Yeah. That was really good.
All of her stuff was well done.
Because so often we get these women doing just the yes. things that they're not supposed to do. But of course this was the third woman that they were going to save. So
yeah,
she got to be smart.
She got to. Well, you know, the third woman doesn't always get to be smart. Sometimes she gets saved just because, you know, it's the show's structure.
Well, yeah, no, but yeah.
This one actually, like, survived because of her own wit and pluck. And yeah, you really got to respect that.
So, Haven, you did a good job with that part of it.
With that part, and yes, that part only. You're so mean. But yeah, it's because the thing is, it's not a stellar episode by any means. It's not a particularly good episode. And the Joe stuff is so frustrating that it makes you just angry at the whole rest of the episode.
Well,
but
yeah,
I will say, you know, there is one or two good things otherwise in this episode.
And JJ does tell Rossi.
Yeah.
Give it up.
That is nice.
That was nice. Finally, Rossi gets called on it.
Yeah, except that, you know, he wouldn't have to because he frigging called himself on it last time.
Last year.
Yeah, and it was much more powerful.
Well, yes, I know, but old habits die hard.
Okay, you're right. And he went back to his old scummy self the minute he was out of that conversation with his daughter.
Yeah. I mean, heaven forbid that he should admit that he was less than perfect.
Yeah. No, that's true. God, I will never get over. I mean, I know we joke about this a lot, that it's like the meta thing of the most perfect David Rossi meta moment, meta David Rossi moment, is when he's so proud of her for writing books with his last name, because they wanted to say that the show wants it to be that, like, she's ready to accept that this is her father and to have a real relationship. But we all know it's that he knows his daughter is exactly as much of an, you know, unprincipled hustler as he is.
Yeah.
And it makes me happy. Oh, my God. This is very embarrassing. But I'm going to say I forgot the worst nitpick ever mm-hmm. while talking about the previous episode. So I'm just going to say it now.
Okay.
Which is the worst nitpick I've ever said, and you can check this. I think this is accurate. Ahem. The quote at the end of the episode is, better to be alone in the dark with a friend than better to be in the dark with a friend than alone in the light. And it's quoted to Helen Keller, to which I would respond, how would she know? As I said, my worst nitpick ever. Thank you for laughing. We can move on to the showcase episode of this week.
We haven't ever. I mean, if we ever, every now and then we pick the biggies, right?
Yeah, the biggies. We never comment. Dig into the quotes. You're right. The we quotes, never do.
We never spend a lot of time on the quotes, but some of them have been so absurd.
They're pretty bad a lot of the time.
Oh, my Lord. No, this one doesn't belong here. But I think the last nitpick was probably using when they used one of Robert Frost's ones, but anyway.
Oh God, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, let's move on to the big showcase episode this week. The Criminal Minds players present Silence of the Lambs.
yes, with a female protagonist.
Yep.
Okay, so we have to say, does she do it as well as? Anyway, Devil's Backbone.
Yeah.
When guards at a Troy, Virginia correctional facility intercept a package containing evidence from two local cold cases, the BAU works with former clinical social worker turned serial killer Antonia Slade to identify the kidnapper.
Okay. Here's the thing. And maybe if I'm going too far with this, you can tell me. I really, on some level, don't understand why anything in this episode happened. Like, okay, so Silence of the Lambs, right? which it's aping, right? Which is very closely aping by design. Like, there's no subtlety about the amount to which it is aping Silence of the Lambs, right? In that thing, so he treated Jame Gum, right? He treated Jame Gum. And he knew about Jame Gum's screwed up relationship with Edward Raspail. And Jame Gum confessed to him that he had murdered Edward Raspail. And that Raspail's head had ended up in his storage unit, right? So when completely coincidentally, Jame Gum kidnaps a senator's daughter, he's like, oh my God, this is my moment. I can contrive to use this to escape. And the only thing I want is to escape, right? And I'm going to use this as a way to escape. Because I know that I'm smarter than them. I know I'm a better planner than they are. So if I can get them to pull me out of the incredibly high security here and take me somewhere podunk, I will be able to make my getaway. And that is his plan when he finds out. In this episode, the female Hannibal is responsible for everything. Like, but what's clear is Hannibal didn't tell him to kill Edward Raspail. He didn't tell him to kidnap a famous woman's daughter, right? No. Like, because he doesn't know. I mean, there's no reason to believe, based on what we see, that Jame Gum knew who this woman that he kidnapped was. She was not targeted. No. She was a victim of opportunity.
Yeah. Right?
To a certain extent. I mean, I'm sure he's seen her around and it's like, well, this is the body type of the women I like to kidnap. So boom, there we go.
Yeah.
But there's no suggestion. So Hannibal didn't put him up to it. It wasn't part of Hannibal's plan. Hannibal sees his moment and he takes advantage of his moment. And that's the plot of the story, right?
Yes.
Here, their female Hannibal has literally controlled every moment of this. She found a groupie. She brainwashed the groupie. She got the groupie to kidnap boys and hold them for 5 years. And now she's getting the groupie to send in their things, send in their bloody underwear, so that she can invite the FBI to see her, right? To what end? Why is she doing any of this? And if I'm dumb and I just didn't understand the episode, please explain it to me, okay? Because I don't know why this character did this. Do you have something to help me with this?
Let me think through this.
Please.
Okay. So the package comes in, so she has been talking with him.
Yep, she has been sending email letters to John Smith in her C++ code. I don't know how she turned letters into C++ code. I mean, like, they talk some nonsense about how the code works, and I mean, I don't understand computers. I don't understand code breaking. I'm going to assume it makes sense. I mean, that's me going a little farther than the show maybe deserves, but I'm going to assume the way they built the code made sense. But so this whole time, she's been sending what looks like easy, like, very basic letters. And she's been sending them out, and they've actually had secret messages to her acolyte, right?
Yes. Now, why she... Well...
Why does she have him send the underwear? Why does she have him...
Why does the FBI come? Why does she have him kill them?
Well, he doesn't kill them.
But he's going to in the full moon.
Yeah, she tells him to go to a specific location on the full moon and kill them there so she can lead the FBI there.
So she can get away and she can see him. Now, but why in the big scheme?
But like, does she want to see him? Does she care?
No.
It's not like this is someone she's close to.
It's not someone she cares about. The show would argue that she just wants to control everything. But why does she want to get out when she knows the FBI isn't going to transfer her? She knows the FBI isn't going to let her go free. She's got no plans to escape, apparently.
Is this, and that's what I'm asking, is this a 5-year plan so she can watch a man kill himself after she's told him to kill himself? Because that's all she accomplishes.
Yeah. It's all she accomplishes because both the boys are saved.
Both the boys are fine. He hasn't been going around killing other boys this whole time and, like, sending her notes about the people he's killing.
No, he hasn't.
Or anything like that?
No, he hasn't. He hasn't taken anyone else. He's managed to keep them alive until this one boy gets sick.
Yeah.
They
actually, for kids who have been in, you know, held by a psychopath for 5 years, they're looking pretty good, honestly. Like, they're
the
in surprisingly
sick,
good shape.
But
one is sick now, but it's been 5 years, is my point.
No,
like,
yeah, but
he's been
then
taking
again,
care of them surprisingly well, is my point.
No, yes, but then he's behaving towards them, I guess, the way she did it, which was be nice for a week or 2 weeks, and then, you know.
Yeah, and then turn, except he's been doing it for 5 years.
Yeah, and that's a long time. And
it is.
And no, I mean, if she, I don't know.
So you don't have a solid answer
for me, is what
you're saying.
I don't have, like, there is... They give you, but in terms of what her big, what her personal payoff, because that's what we're talking about, is what her personal payoff would have been in this whole scenario is beyond me, because that's basically what you're taking.
That's what I'm
what
asking.
You're saying is that you need to have a reason for her to do this. And if she doesn't want to get free.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't really care one way or another, if she's in Kentucky.
Yep.
And she doesn't appear to.
Nope.
Then why did she, was this, she just wanted to get out there so she could have the power to tell this guy that he should kill himself? Yeah. And I would also ask you, why the hell did they let her go and talk to him?
When this is obviously what was going to happen. Yeah, because it's like he says, if I'll put down the gun if I can talk to her.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, I guess that's fine.
Well, actually, no, he just wants to see her.
You're right. He just wants to see
her. He just, is she here? Can I see her?
Yeah, you're right.
He has no interest.
Yeah, he doesn't even want to, like, you're right. He just wants to see her.
and tell her what how well he's done.
Yeah. And then she's like, okay, well, now kill yourself. And he does.
And that, but they let her go and talk to him. And I'm going,
why?
Why are you letting him?
She has no leverage. He has no leverage. He's lowered the gun.
Yeah. And the little boy is gone.
And the little boy is safe. So why are you even letting her get close to him?
Yeah.
And is that, and that's the thing. Like, that's the, what keeps this whole thing from working is fundamentally, I don't get what she gets
purpose,
out of this.
What her purpose yeah. was in this. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't even sexually abuse them.
No. He was literally just holding them for 5 years
for
because she asked him to. Yeah. And it's like, if you're going to do that much, she better have one hell of an end game. But her end game was, hi, kill yourself.
Yeah.
That's what all of this was for?
Yeah. And I think the only thing that, that carries this so that people is Frances Fisher.
It's a fantastic performance.
An absolutely brilliant performance.
Like all of the stuff she says is crap, but oh my God, what a performance.
Yeah. And then the last scene with her and Hotch.
Such a good scene.
Oh my God. He is so good. As an
I mean,
actor.
Fundamentally, it really pisses me off that this is one of the last four episodes that he's ever going to be on the show.
Yeah.
Because you watch the two of them in that scene, and you're like, oh my God, the gravitas he brings.
Yeah.
To that scene.
Yeah.
And the two of them together.
Yeah.
It's one of the best actor pairings we've ever had on the show.
Yeah, it is. It is. It rivals the one that he had with... Right in what, season one, season two? Season
Which
one.
Which scene?
You know, with the serial killer, and then they talk about how they're raised.
Yes, yes, in season one, when he talks
season
about
one,
his
father. Yeah.
Oh, the father.
When he talks
and, yes.
The father and.
Oh.
And the guy said, did
you
I.
Get
you
chills
know,
thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, the
yeah.
hitman was the killer.
Yeah, the hitman, the Iceman,
yeah,
the
said,
one
did
based
I
on
have
the Iceman.
Choice? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I
oh.
have a choice?
Yeah.
You know? And. This is what
and he's like,
it
I'm
made
here.
Me this, and there's Hotch going,
and some
yes,
people
and this is
go,
why.
some
yeah.
people make them, it makes people hunt people
hunt
like you.
Like you, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
it makes
it's
like
such
you.
A good scene.
It
and
was,
it's just
yeah.
the two of them together.
But this scene with her and him at the end actually raises this episode.
Yeah.
If for once, instead of complaining about how they mess up the end of the
an
episode.
Ending. We heard what you were about to say. Yes, about no. Sorry. They so often no, but so often this show screws it up right at the end.
Yeah,
like if there is a characteristic thing that Criminal Minds does is they fail to stick the landing. They mess
yeah,
it up right at the end.
I, it's like, how can you do this? And
so
I'm just...
consistently.
So consistently. In fact, I'm going to have to probably go back and listen to all of our episodes and find out when the first time they screwed up an episode so badly that I had to scream about it, you know, and because I don't remember that in the first and second year.
Yeah. Like, when did they start massively messing up these endings?
Yeah, because you have a powerful Sharon Lee Watson actually wrote this one. Felix Alcala directed it. It's yeah. It looks good too.
Oh,
and
no,
I
it's a good looking
think,
episode.
Yeah, I do think, you know, the managing to have singles and doubles wasn't too bad. I don't think they're writing terribly well for JJ, but I don't know whose decision that is.
Yeah. You get that ridiculous idea. You should be in charge of the team. And I'm like, no.
Oh,
she
on.
100% should not be in charge of the team.
No.
She's a mess, and you were bad at reading people.
Well, I don't think Slade. I think
really
Slade
meant that.
Was,
no.
No.
Yeah, she was
I
just
think
screwing
Slade
with her.
Was screwing with her.
Oh, she absolutely was.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Like Francis.
It's, and the part is the what do you call it? It's kind of hilarious that they actually meta say that in the episode, and I was just being silly then, because they actually full on say in the episode
yeah.
that she is trying to get us off off base
yeah.
by treating us the opposite of how we're used to being treated. Yeah. And the funny thing is, showing no respect to Aaron, who absolutely deserves it. And the idea is, the way you would throw JJ off base is to suggest that she's competent. That's so mean!
Yeah.
I don't know if the show meant it to be as mean as it is.
No, I don't think so. To be honest, I don't think that
they thought that through.
That they thought that through, like that they interconnected those thoughts and ideas. Yeah. But the point is at the end, right?
Yeah.
Hotch is the only one that gets his back.
Oh yeah.
Right? He's the only one.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so powerful.
Yeah, I mean, so they ended it well, so all of these other things, so you forget, why the hell did she do this in the first place?
Yeah, but no, but then that's the thing, it's a great ending. It's a great ending to the episode, but then I'm watching it for the second time, and I'm like, I don't understand why anything in this episode happened.
Yeah, and that's actually, it took me a while when you asked me, while to kind of go, yeah, I guess you're right. Like I don't know why this was. She bored and she needed to do some manipulation stuff. I don't know.
But it's like, but it doesn't even have an impact because nobody gets killed except for the guy she tells to kill himself.
Yeah, and he's such a sad person.
I know, he's just a sad mess who she manipulated.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how, like, a good ending can hypnotize you. Well, yeah. I mean, I always go back to that wonderful line from the movie Adaptation where Charlie Kaufman is talking to, what do you call it? I was going to say Brian Cox because it's Brian Cox, but he's playing McKee, the writer of Story and, you know, famous script doctor, McKee. Robert McKee, but it's Brian Cox, who, of course, the original Hannibal Lecter.
Yep.
So there you go.
Red Dragon.
What's funny about it, there's that great, it all ties together nicely. Mm-hmm. It'd be better if it was Anthony Hopkins, because of the one we're talking about, but he says in the thing that it's like, literally, people will forgive anything if you let them walk out of the movie with a good ending.
Yeah.
And that is the message he has to, and it's funny, because I don't know if you've seen that adaptation, but from there, like, the entire first three quarters of the movie have been about, you know, Charlie Kaufman's having no idea how to adapt this unbelievably boring book about orchids.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he talks to Robert McKee. And then for the last third of the movie, it turns out that actually orchids can be turned into an incredible opioid and there's a drug smuggling ring going on over them. And people start having shooting and car chases. Because Brian Cox told him, you gotta have a strong ending.
That's all.
No, and it's very funny, but it's very true. And that's what this episode proves, that it's like, that ending is so powerful that it makes you forget that nothing about the episode made sense.
Like, the core storyline of her doing this is like, okay, but we never get a reason for her
to do any of it. Yeah, because
it's
not like she's even trying to get revenge on the BAU or anything.
No.
Because she doesn't get revenge on the BAU. She doesn't accomplish anything.
No.
What was the other thing? Oh, yeah, and the other thing, of course, is, it pisses me off what they do with Tara here. Because she's like, you've got a, you know, I recognize you. You've got a dark secret.
I know. And then, wasn't that for our Metaterra?
And it never pays off.
No, but that would be because they would have to go where our Metaterra. In other words, when you watch that, right, you're just going, she recognizes
that there's this dark hole inside of Tara, just like there is in her.
Yeah.
You know, you can takes one to know one type of situation.
Yeah, it was given our Metaterra.
Well, but this episode, because as we went through this, so the first few episodes with Tara, I'm like, oh my god, she's a psychopath, and they're going to actually address that. And then to do this episode and make it seem like that's what's coming, you can understand how I felt so cheated by this episode, what comes next, after they did this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really seems like that's what they're heading towards. And what really pisses me off is that the payoff for that is, so she says a story, she tells a story about like running into racist goons in Germany, right? Being beaten up by a bunch of racist goons in Germany and then getting revenge. And she's like, that's not a true story. I someday want to hear the what you really are. And then next year we'll find out, no, it was a 100% true story, except it was her brother that got beaten up, not her. And to which I would respond,
well, no, Fisher does say it happened to somebody else.
Well, no, but my point is, that is.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that ends up being right, to which I say, but why would Tara lie about that? Like, I don't understand why you would not just say, my brother got beaten up by some racist goons and I got revenge for him. Like, I don't understand why she keeps it a secret.
Well,
like, it's not more or less shameful.
Shush.
Yep, please.
Tara,
yeah,
as with all other characters in Criminal Minds, does not have, or does not have any true sense of herself. Right? She is not introspective. She probably doesn't even know that she's a psychopath. Right?
I guess you're right.
It would fit.
It does fit.
All the other characters. Like, I'm going, we create these meta characters based on what we're given by these writers in the show.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it, but you know what? You're probably right.
You know, that she, again, no self-introspection.
Yeah.
You know, she lives her life on the surface.
Yeah.
And the surface is all there is. When she got revenge, that was okay because that was related to her brother. And as we know on this show, anything, you can kill somebody. We're going to get to that, aren't we?
Yep.
That, you know, you can, for revenge, of course you can.
Yep.
Well, so that's the show. I keep telling you, this show has no moral center.
No, it's true.
It is all on that surface level. All of the people.
Well, it's all surface, and it's all morality is entirely defined by your relate. Like, it's the actions, relations to whether you want something to happen or not.
The old situational thing.
Yeah, it is 100% situational morality. And that's all the show has, which is very weird for a show about, you know, serial killers and the hunting thereof.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, the Tara thing, I can, as I say, you know, you can fit that into the rest of it, that she just isn't aware of who and what she is.
Yeah.
And she has found a career that allows her to interact. It's only someone like Antonia Slade who just looks at her and knows.
Yeah, who knows right away. And God, if they had paid this off and brought Antonia back, that would have been so nice.
They didn't, but like, it was really, I mean, it was so funny that whole scene, right? And I'm going, oh yeah, no, because it just fits so perfectly with this. Well, it was, you were the one that first, right? Brought it up, and I'm going,
yep.
But when we talked about it before, but she can be totally unaware. The very fact that she has no reaction the first time she kills somebody, she doesn't have PTSD. She doesn't have.
Nope.
She has no emotional reaction to it. You know,
and that's in that episode. She finds out, oh, it doesn't bother me at all that I just shot that guy in the face.
Yeah. That you doesn't know? Bother me. But she does have an ethical sort of structure.
Yep.
Right.
She was for a psychopath, she was surprisingly well raised.
Well, no. Well, yeah, but you know, I mean,
it happens.
And she
there are people with brain damage. There are people with chemical disorders that turn them into psychopaths. And I'm sure it wasn't child abuse that did it to Tara. Mm-hmm. I think it was just, I think she really just does have something wrong with her brain.
Yeah. Or she, you know, it may be there from the beginning. It may be a slight, you know, you don't know, but there's the ethical structure, though we don't know much about it. So we don't know much. We never really know much about her past, but then we don't know an awful lot
about almost anyone's past.
No, other than like the characters that were there in the beginning.
Yeah, we learn a lot about, but the new characters, not so much.
Yeah, it's interesting, and that goes to the commentary too. But anyway.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a deeply troubling episode, as you can tell from our conversation about it, for a bunch of reasons. Like, there's a bunch of reasons that this episode is troubling to us, but the big one is that it sets up this thing for Tara, and it points in the way that so many things in this first season with Tara have pointed us in this incredible direction for the character
And there's
that the show never pays off.
no, never pays off. And look what they did to her in the last 10 episodes.
Oh, you mean the season of television where she only had two lines of dialogue for the whole season?
Where
Is
you
that the
just thought
season?
she hadn't been in it for the last 5 years.
If I had told you, yeah, if I had told you that, you know,
4 years.
that Tara wasn't in the last season, you would have a hard time disproving that.
Yeah.
It's weird how little Aisha Tyler has to do. But anyway, we're gonna get there eventually. For now, we're gonna wrap this up here. I don't even have to ask you what the homework is for next week. We're all gonna watch The Storm together and spend a while talking about that because it tries to retcon in kind of a motivation for Antonia Slade's actions, but it makes no sense. But you know what? I'll save that for next time. For now, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any what's that word I'm looking for? Yes, suggestions for pieces of profiling related fiction you think we should check out, we would love for to hear from you. So drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@blogspot. My God, how do I keep doing that? profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We will see you back here next Thursday. But until then, I'm going to say thanks for listening and au revoir.
And from Dr. Redmond, hope you got through the coronavirus and have a good weekend.
My God, I should make it clear we're recording this just as things are starting to get bad in America. So we have no idea what things are going to be like in 7 months when you hear this. But keep
Yes.
safe, I guess, is what we're trying to say.
Yes, keep safe. I am now 3 weeks. I've got 3 weeks unplanned vacation. So,
No, I get it. I get it.
yeah.
All right. Au revoir. Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.